Hi, everybody. Will here with this week's interview chair brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV and Pro Plan. This week on the chair, we have Marjorie Margarella. Hi, everybody. Will here with this week's interview chair. And on the chair is my dear friend, Marjorie Margarella from Margietta Pointers. And she's an AKC judge as well. Hi, Marge. How are you?
Just doing great. Thank you.
Good. You told me you had your first grass cutting today.
Yes. Yeah.
You're so lucky. We're not even close yet.
Yeah. We're starting to see buds on the trees, too.
Oh, we see a bit. I've seen a bit of that. I have a bunch of bird feeders out back, and I have a million birds right now. And I have this one cardinal, and I think it's a female, and she keeps hitting my window. And so I'm looking out the window, and I can see these buds on the tree. She must be putting a nest there or something. I don't know. But it's fun. So the weather's starting to turn here. I was talking to my friend up north this morning, and in the background, I could only see, I see snow falling. I'm thinking, oh, my God, thank God, it's not that bad.
There were places in New Jersey that had snow this past weekend.
Oh, enough snow. All right. So tell me how you got started in this sport we've all loved for these years.
Well, my first dog was a pet store Irish Setter. And
mine too.
I mean, yours too?
Yes.
Yeah, I think everybody had an Irish Setter about my age, all started in Irish Setters. I mean, just, you know, 24 for a major and that sort of thing. So she was wild as could be. And I brought her to an obedience class. And while I was there, I met some other people who had an Irish Setter. And they were showing the dog and, you know, matches and whatnot. So they told me about it. So I went to a match with her, and I mean, she wasn't very good, but I got hooked. I really got hooked right away. So then I started going to handling classes. Staten Island Kennel Club had a handling class. And believe it or not, there was a club in New York called the Gotham Kennel Club, and they had handling classes too. So, I mean, I was obsessed. I went 2 days a week to these handling classes and whatnot.
How old were you, Margie?
Probably early 20s. So then I started showing her matches. She was a pet store dog, but I got to meet other people and it was amazing. I lived in Brooklyn near Prospect Park. You'd be amazed at the people that walked their dogs in that park that were in dogs. Seymour Weiss, Jessie Bell. I don't know if you remember Jessie, but she had Airedales. I met Anne-Marie Kubas there with an Irish Setter. And as little as I knew hers was better than mine. So I got her hooked on it too. And we've been friends ever since, like 50 years. But there were so many people in that park. There was a gal who had, had Basenjis. And I just got friendly with all these people. And you really learn a lot about everybody else's breeds when you do that. So there were a lot of people in Brooklyn at that time that were showing dogs. So that was the start. And then my sister's boyfriend lost his dog and he wanted another dog. So he asked me, he didn't care if it was a Dalmatian or a pointer because I had already started in sporting. I thought, okay, we'll get you a pointer. So at that time, Bill Metz was showing dogs and he was about the only one around here that was had pointers. Lived up in New City. And I went up there and got a pointer puppy for him and finished it easily, really easily. And then I was really hooked, really hooked. And, you know, I knew Ted Eldridge through the Irish Setters. And I was at a point where I didn't know which direction I wanted to go in, whether I wanted to stay with the pointers or the Irish Setters. And he said to me, my destiny is because of him. He said, Irish Setters are in really good hands, you know, but the pointers need a young person. They need somebody in that breed to do something, you know, to help it along. So that really did influence me.
I have. He influenced a lot of people. That man.
He was wonderful.
He sure was. He was a huge influence on me.
And he was also an influence on, you know, at that time there was controversy about whether judges should be showing, and he was adamant that they should. And he had a, you know, big impact on that decision too.
He was just someone that you listened to as well. He had that authority to him and feel to him. So let's see, how'd you get started in pointers then? Where did we go?
Yeah, so then I bought a dog from Helen Duggins, who was actually a boxer person, but she had gotten a dog from a bitch from Shandown Kennels, and she bred that, put an ad in one of our pointer magazines, and I wound up buying her. And it just kind of progressed from there, you know. But the best was I went up to visit Bob Hawker in Worcester, Massachusetts. And he had a litter of puppies, and he really wanted me to take one of those puppies. But there was an older bitch there that I just really fell in love with. And she took to me, which I found out later was a miracle because she didn't like anybody. It was like amazing. So at any rate, his wife said, he didn't want me to have her. She said, I'll work on him tonight. So the next day we're at the show at Worcester, and he shows up in the afternoon as I'm ready to leave. And he puts her in the front seat of my car going home. So that was my foundation bitch. She was the mother of a story. Yeah. Oh yeah. She was, oh God, I can't even remember how many champions she had, but National Acclaim was one of them.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah, yeah. She was a great producer.
What litter was Deputy in though? What was that? He was
like, I bred her several times. She was like the fourth time I bred her. I went down to the Atlanta Kennel Club had a centennial show or something, and I went down there, and Jim Sawyers was showing this Smackwater Jack dog, who was a nephew to Donna. I called her Donna, and I bred her at that show, and that was. You know, Deputy came from that letter. Yeah.
That's incredible how fast that happened. And for, well, it seems fast, but it wasn't that fast. But yeah. It was still.
The first litter I bred her to Welsh Lost Thunderbolt, which was a half brother. Both, you know, she, Donna and Thunder were both sired by Counterpoint's Lord Ashley, who was, you know, a big winner of the time, yeah. Westminster Group winner, shown by Corky Vroom and everything.
Yeah. I remember the dog, yeah.
Yeah, I loved that dog. I actually worked for the Metzes one summer, and he was there. He had, you know, was retired there, and he was just a neat dog. He just roamed, they had like 60-odd acres there, and he just roamed the property, and really neat.
That is cool. Yeah. So but I don't want to get ahead, but tell me about Deputy's career.
Well, Michael Zollo came to my house because he told me he wanted a puppy out of Donna. And I said something, and he misunderstood what I said. He said he thought I said from the fourth litter. Well, ironically, she was from the fourth litter that Donna had. As he's there, the dog, you could tell he was getting sick. We're watching him, and he's getting sick. Wound up, I had to rush him to the Animal Medical Center in Manhattan. He had parvo. And he was in there for, you know, for a while. And then when he came back home, Michael wasn't sure he should take him because we didn't really know what the long-term effects of having parvo was going to be. And some people kind of tried to talk him out of it, but he wound up taking the dog. And I mean, that dog was... He took that dog everywhere as a puppy. Just amazing. So, and then he was able to get Isabel Robeson to back the dog, which really helped a lot because we were young at the time and didn't have a lot of money to do campaigning or anything else. So
what did that, how did that feel when he ended up putting that show in New York?
Oh my God. I was at that show. I was sitting in the bleachers, you know, in the bleachers. And when he won that group, I just couldn't believe it. Wayne Boyd was sitting next to me. I threw myself on Wayne. I mean, I just, we all went crazy screaming. Well, I went down there to, you know, to have the group picture, to watch the group picture being taken. And I don't know what happened, but I lost my purse that night. Everything in it, with car keys, everything. So now I'm crazy. And, George Alston, I think he loaned me his van, I think, so that I could go home and deal with all of that nonsense, you know, about getting the, you know, keys to my house and all sorts of stuff. And I called up my school and told them that my dog had won the group at Westminster and that they wouldn't see me until Thursday. I wasn't coming back until Thursday. When I came back after he went best, my principal, who used to think I was a lunatic, okay, like a crazy person, he came out of his office and shook my hand. And after that, I could get any day off I wanted. I could do anything I wanted in that place. It was amazing.
That kind of gave me goosebumps.
it was amazing. I can remember I got it right shortly after that. I got an invitation to judge in Australia. And of course, it was during the school year. He went to bat for me to take that week off from work. I mean,
Had you started judging at that point then already?
Yeah, I believe I had. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was interesting
too.
Too
far ahead. Pardon me?
That was interesting. I would Pointer Club had me do a sweepstakes. It was at Wilmington Kennel Club. It was our national. And Connie Taylor was doing the breed. I just really enjoyed it. I enjoyed doing the sweeps, had a really good time. And that's what prompted me to go ahead and start applying. So
was there anybody you leaned on to help you in the judging process, like a mentor?
Well, one of my mentors and pointers was Jack Rementer. I used to go over to his place all the time and soak up as much knowledge as I could, you know.
That was always fun doing those things. I always felt like I was bugging them, but I did it anyway.
But you know what? People don't do that anymore.
No, they don't.
They don't. It's very, very sad. It really is very sad. But I
remember sitting at Sally Virgilia's kitchen. And do you remember Sally Virgilia? Setters, no. Raggy Run? Well, she had a lot of English. Carol Holland's dad showed her dogs, Horace.
Oh, okay.
And she just lived in the same town as I. So I used to go in there and I'd sit there. And she was a chain smoker. So she would smoke all day long and talk about English setters all day long. I'm sure I came home smelling like cigarettes, but it was worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I got so immersed in it. That's all I wanted to do was talk dogs, you know?
Yeah. It's very addicting.
It is very addicting. There was another lady, Dolores Allsworth. She lived in Maryland. She had pointers and also poodles. And I used to go down and stay with them and, you know, also soak up as much as I could. So
what happened right after, well, Deputy goes best in show at Westminster or wins best show at Westminster? Where do you go as a breeder from there now? Like, you've produced this best in show winner.
Actually, about that same time, I had imported some dogs from England too. There were things I wanted to change in my bloodline. I wanted to have some stronger heads and heads and tails, the characteristics, you know, important characteristics in our breed. So I managed to, I went to England with my mother, which was amazing. I brought her to dog shows and she hated dogs. I mean, it was like, so at any rate, I saw this Pipeaway bitch. And she just took my heart away. I mean, I just absolutely loved her. So I spoke to the people who, you know, the Parsons, and made arrangements to go to their house and to see their dogs and whatnot. And I can remember calling Tom Bradley from England, telling him about the bitch. And I think he had had her. I think he had seen her at Windsor. So I just wanted to, you know, get his advice or whatever. And he loved her too. So I went ahead and I got her, and she did make an impact in my breeding program. And then I, several years later, I imported another dog from Sue Wilkinson, the Herwin Kennel. And he was really, he had beautiful head, short, you know, bee sting tail, compact, beautiful shoulders, could have a little bit more rear angulation, which was a thing with a lot of the English dogs, but he stamped his type. And to this day, you could still see it in my dogs, how he influenced my breeding program. But, you know, I realized that in order to really be competitive, I knew what I needed to change and improve on. And I think sometimes people miss that now.
Sure they do, right? No question they do.
And, you know, especially now, it's easier to finish dogs because the numbers aren't what they were. So, but if you, you know, back when, well, like an Irish set is when it was 24 or 25 for a major, you had to have a really good one to be competitive, you know.
Yeah.
And even though pointers were never that popular, I was always competitive, even in school with sports and everything. So I wasn't content with just, you know, I wanted to win. I really wanted to win. And
winning's more fun. So
yes, and you had to have really good dogs because you were competing in the group against Jane and Bob and Bill Trainer, Ed, you know, Bauer. So you had to have a good dog in order to be able to pull it off in a group on the group level. So yeah, you had to know what you need, what your dogs needed, you know, what you needed in your breeding program.
You're right. So many people are blinded by that and they don't look that far ahead.
Well, and the thing is that, to be honest with you, I mean, with as many shows as we have and the quality isn't there, you can place with dogs that are, you know, okay, mediocre. Mm-hmm. And then people get, you know, think that their dogs are fine. But, you know, there's not the, I don't know, there's nothing like having competition to make you improve in your breeding program.
There's no question. There was a time up here where our English setters were really, well, you knew our English was really hard to compete against up here. And
they were wonderful. The Blue Beltons.
Oh, yeah. It made every breeder in that area, they had to get so much better just to compete at the breed level.
And exactly.
It made us so strong. I remember going to watching the setters and I could almost go to a local show and pick out my next special sitting in the classes somewhere, you know. So it's not as much anymore. It was the same reason because we have so many shows. We don't have as many shows as you do, but there are times where I can walk out that door and go three different directions to a dog show. So,
which is sad because you don't have the entries that we do to begin with.
No,
so
we don't.
So it waters it all down.
And very much so, and it's happening everywhere. But like you were talking earlier about like those groups were Bob and Jane and Richard Bauer and George. Well, those were tough groups. Well, nowadays that doesn't happen enough because they go their separate ways to stay away from each other.
So. Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly true. I mean, when I started, there was just one way to go, you know.
Yeah. I remember going down to the Old Dominion show and the group was like a Westminster group. It was unbelievable, you know.
Yeah. Oh,
well. Days of the past. We have to go forward. So you're still breeding pointers?
No, sadly I'm not because.
Oh, you're not anymore. I thought you were.
Okay. The last one I had, and I think she was right up there with, you know, one of the better ones that I've had. I tried to breed her three times, and it was a disaster. The first time, I brought semen in from England. And she missed. Okay. $10,000 later. It's just unbelievable. I bred her again to a dog that I loved using frozen semen again. And of course, all I wanted was a bitch. I get two male puppies and the better of the two has a bad mouth. And in like 50 years of breeding, that was my second bad mouth. Okay.
Jeez.
I know. I try it a third time. She has a singleton bitch puppy that's deformed. I had her spayed. That was it. I mean, but, you know, well, I felt God was definitely trying to tell me something, you know. And it was very hard to take at the beginning, very hard, because it's like 50 years. My, you know,
sure.
It was awful. But I've come to grips with it now. And there's a litter right now that I would be very tempted to take something, but I don't think I want to have a puppy. It's too much work, way too much work.
They are. I know, but it is tempting.
I know, but physically, I don't think I also don't want my dogs outliving me. That's the other thing. So, I have right now a 14-year-old. They live long lives, So I've just come to terms with it.
You bred some English Cockers there for a while too, and you made your mark in that pretty quick as well. So,
it was easy to do that because I got great dogs. I mean, I started off with a bitch that I got from Northworth Kennel in Finland. And I was judging in Finland, and they have these generation classes with a lot, and I thought, oh my God, they were like cookie cutters. They you couldn't tell one from the other. So I started communicating with Nina, and I wound up getting a puppy from her. And, it was weird. I collected English Cocker things, mm-hmm. prints, statues, and whatnot before I ever thought I wanted that breed. There was just something about that breed that intrigued me. So then I told you that I got a Herman dog from Sue Wilkinson, and I Jack Clark, who was Cornbow English Cockers, had gone to visit her while I was there. And he showed me a picture of this Cornbow Ensign dog that he had in the Netherlands. And I could not believe it. I just couldn't believe it. I met those guys at Crufts. And as it turns out, I communicated with them. One of them had a really bad accident and they had to downsize. I bought three dogs from them at the same time. Cornbow Connection, Cornbow Enterprise, and Asquain's Betty. And these were bloodlines that were incredible. Enterprise was sired by the dog that Trisha Bentley went best in show with at Crufts. So, the pedigrees on these dogs were wonderful. And, so I didn't screw it up. I was very easy. I got very lucky with those bloodlines.
Right.
Yeah.
And just stayed on course. That was good, though, because there were some beautiful dogs. I love that's one of my favorite breeds as well. So I love that breed. So you started judging what year? Do you remember?
I think maybe 84.
Wow.
That would be right before Deputy went best, about 2 years before Deputy went best.
And the reason being, other than the sweepstakes, would you have another reason? You think it was just time, or?
Well, I've been handling, but now limited handling, mostly just to so that I could afford to go to shows with my own dogs. And I handled Vishlis for Bud McGivern. Carl Tuttle gave me a short hair to show, so I had a couple of things. When I started judging, I got four breeds, which was pretty good. Because most people, unless you were a professional handler and did a lot of handling, you started one breed if you were just a breeder. So four really helped. And then you add on four, you get another four and then eight and whatnot. So I don't know. It just was the next move for me to
evolution. Take.
Yeah.
So do you remember your first assignment?
Oh, yes, I do. It was in Elm City, and I had just moved into the house that I'm still in, and I had no money. I had absolutely no money, and they invited me to judge, and I was very good friends with Celeste Gavin in Irish Setters, and I said, Celeste, why is anybody going to spend $17 for my opinion? I just couldn't even imagine that they would, and then I thought, oh my God. I contacted the show chair, who was somebody I knew, and I said, are you going to pay for my hotel room? And she says, oh yes, of course. I thought, well, that's good, because I wasn't going to be able to go if you didn't. Things were tight. I, started teaching, $8,000 salary. Come on, things are really tight. And when I bought this house, it was really tight. So, but, and then I really, I don't know. I just enjoyed it.
You've been judging for a long time now. You have three groups, though, you said?
Three groups and three non-sporting breeds.
So sporting hounds and working?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And there were several reasons why I didn't go further than that. One was I was still showing, and I could see that people who were really moving ahead really fast, they didn't give themselves enough time to get a handle on the breeds that they were judging before they were adding more, and you get in over your head. And I didn't want that to happen. I wanted to be able to, if somebody asked me a question, that I could intelligently tell them why I did what I did, you know. So that was one thing. The other thing was I got so involved with the clubs that I belong to. The Pointer Club, I think I've been president 9 terms, you know, and then, of course, New Brunswick. You won't believe this, next year will be my 50th year as their show chair. Now, how crazy is that? I mean, that is and the show now, it's a huge cluster, and I spend the whole year working on that show. It's just constant.
That's a wonderful show. I love going there, so.
Yeah, and I mean, we've been really lucky. When the setters lost their the pier, then they went up to Tarrytown, trying to keep that combined, you know, setter thing from the Statler Hilton days and everything.
Right.
Then they, with Westminster moving and all sorts of things, and then hotels got so expensive they just couldn't afford it. So we were lucky. Anne Marie was a member of a member of New Brunswick, and Lords Fernandez is a member of Bronx, which is our sister club. So they got the setters to come with us. So we have like 3 days of huge setter entries. It's wonderful. Yeah. Really wonderful.
That's why we always went. Jill yeah. And, I,
so. And then this year I suggested to them that maybe they should do like a setter showcase that all the breed winners from the 3 days compete. And they did do that. And I think it was...
Oh, I wasn't there this year. Wow.
Yeah. I think it was really good. Yeah.
Well, that would be fun. It was like,
but you know what?
Now, we used to have the tri-setter up here. We did that too. Uh-huh. So.
But now it's like clubs, you need to have a shtick to get people to enter your show too. I mean, we did a Bully Ganza last year, and we're
so
continuing
choices,
with that.
So.
You have to do things like that. Extra attractions to encourage people to come. You know, because there's so many shows, so many different ways you can go.
A lot, you know.
Yeah. So
dog shows are expensive now to attend. So
very expensive.
It's crazy. Like it's $1,000 a weekend. There's no question. So
easily. And now, I mean, with the clubs that have 2 shows in a day, I think, oh my God, well, how do people afford that to pay a handler? And but on the other hand, it's probably still cheaper than going yourself. You know, it's very expensive.
We had those quite early on. And it was supposed to be for remote areas. Then it started to get crazy. And they're just too hard on the dogs for me.
I think it is too.
Yeah, just too hard on us. The handlers and the dogs, it's just too much. So, especially in the summer when it was hot out, and I tried my best to, okay, I'll show in the morning, and I'll show in the morning on Saturday, I'll show in the afternoon on Sunday, and things like that. But sometimes you get tempted because they're good panels. So.
Right, right. Yeah, I can remember I had an English Cocker that I had for a while from Nina, and Flavia was showing it for me, and he was going out to the Kentucky Louisville shows, and then he was going to the Tar Heel, and I really wanted the dog in Louisville, but I said to him, I can't send him like that. That'll be more shows than he's ever had in his life in like a week and a half.
Right.
You know, it's just too much, way too much.
Lot.
Yeah. So
this Flavio, I met Flavio when I was younger because he had inquired about breeding to one of our dogs, but he was such a character. I knew he showed for you. So,
well, he lived near me when he was in New Jersey.
Did he?
Lived. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I learned a lot from him, a whole lot.
What a talent. We all did, you know, we all did. I remember sitting watching him, just, he was a talent, there's no question. And I think about things now, and I still have a couple of his letters he wrote to my parents looking to breed to a dog. And, and when I first came across them, I'm like, Flavio? It's because I was just a kid. So I remember being on the Tar Heel, and he had that buff cocker dog there. It was the Florida circuit. I can't remember.
Oh, it was beautiful.
I was just in awe. Just in awe of how the dog was trimmed and presented. I had never seen something like that before.
On a loose lead. So, floating around the ring. Beautiful.
Yeah. Sure was. Anyway.
You should have seen his instructions on, for, you know, his help on what they had to do every day with the Bichon that he was showing. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
He was a perfectionist. Yeah, he was. He absolutely was.
And made everybody, it was just like having good dogs in your area. It made everybody step up. That is true.
Competition. Yeah. If you want to win, you have to.
Everybody step up.
Exactly.
He was something. So you've judged a lot of dogs over the years. Without talking about dogs that are being campaigned now, is there some dogs that have really stuck in your mind throughout the years that are almost blueprints for that breed now when you walk into a ring?
When I was in England, there was a Welsh Springer Spaniel that blew me away. I mean, absolutely beautiful. And to this day, when I go in to do Welsh, I think about that dog and how correct he was, you know, because the Welsh they've gone through changes here. I mean, when first started, they all were so wide in the front when they came at you, and some of them are longer than they should be. But this, even though it's kind of a square and a rectangle, you know, they're not supposed to be as long, you know, long as a freight train. But yeah, but that dog, definitely, I think of him when I'm judging Welsh. Trying to think. Well, I was very high on the pointer bitch that Ash showed 2 years ago, the kitty bitch, Cat Got Your Tongue. I thought she was lovely. So
that's in your own breed. So that must have.
Oh yeah, I thought she was really cool. Matter of fact, she's the one who has the litter right now that I could be very easily tempted, but I'm not going to. I am not going to. Best if I don't see them.
Yeah. So.
I'm trying to think of any others that really. Well, Nathan, the bloodhound, I actually gave him his first group.
Yeah, he was a beauty. Yeah.
Beautiful dog. Absolutely beautiful.
I got to see his rear end a lot that year.
Yeah. So, no, I've been lucky. I'll tell you, I've seen not just this country, but the world through judging. It's amazing. I've really been very lucky going to a lot of places that, you know, I never would have gotten to.
How do you find when you go overseas that you have to adjust your eye sometimes to certain breeds, like let's say Springers? Well, if you're judging Springers in the UK, or you've got to adjust your eye.
I prefer their Springers. I mean, I do. I just
do. That's
the
country of origin, so.
Well, yeah. I went to Australia early on. Matter of fact, the trip I told you about. And I went to, can't think of her name right now. She was a top Springer breeder down there. And when I looked at her dogs and she was moving them, it was like the light bulb went on. Oh my God, this is what they're supposed to look like. You know, beautiful shoulder angulation, rear angulation, flying around the ring. I don't know if you know who Cameron is in Australia, Cavallo, I think. He has her line. He's, and I almost bought a Springer from him about 2 years ago. I really wanted one. And it turns out that he brought the dog into the vet. He was having this, I guess the bitch, I don't know. He went, at any rate, he had his semen tested and he was sterile. So I never got that dog. But that type I really love. And the Springer people know it because they know who likes that type. You know, yeah. there are some in this country.
Oh, but, sure there are.
Yeah. Okay. But, and they know where to show and where not to show.
Yeah. But I judged in, I think it was Maryland, and I had a good assortment of them, you know. I think I gave one winner's dog and one reserve winner's bitch, I think. So, you know, you have to learn to appreciate them. When I was in Ireland at one time, there was an English Springer dog there, and I was so taken by him, and I knew he wasn't what I was used to seeing. But right. My God, he just filled everything. The way he carried himself, his bone, his soundness, it was just one of those things.
Their heads also. They're spaniel heads, which are some of ours. They're not really spaniel heads.
No, they get a little settery on us. So, yeah, but it's funny because I find out when I was a handler, and we would get European judges come over here, and some of them would adjust their eye to our way of thinking, but then some wouldn't, and they would just stand firm and know, I'm sorry, lovely dog, but it's not used to seeing. But it's difficult for them. It really is.
Well, I think our sporting group has changed the most out of all of the groups. We've just stylized them, you know, I think that would be the hardest part for somebody from England to come over here and to judge our sporting group, because it is really different. It really is different.
We've built some caricatures and certain things.
Exactly. Just extreme.
Yeah. Because even as talented as our terrier people are over here, you can still see the terrier in there. They're just so good.
Well, our terriers now go over there and win.
Yeah, and they're so, but our groomers have just, they've gotten, it's unbelievable how talented they all are now.
Yes.
These outlines they continuously see, and the jackets you continuously see. And we saw them as a youngster. I saw them as well, like Bobby Fischer and whatnot. But now the ring is full of them. So it's incredible. And that's a dedicated craft.
Yes, it certainly is.
Yeah. I was always jealous of them.
Well, it was too much work for me. I'm not really, I am not a groomer, never claimed to be one. So,
go ahead.
When I was starting, I was telling you about being in Brooklyn and whatnot. I wound up, you know, getting some other breeds that I was interested in. I had a Basenji from Barbara Wardell who was doing pretty nice stuff with her Basenjis. Then I got a Whippet. You'll know who this is. A name from the past, Freeman Perry. Do you remember him?
Yes.
He had a Winterfold bitch that he bred to a Laguna dog. And I got a male from that breeding. Yeah. So I kind of got a little involved in different breeds. And I also got a French Bulldog from a breeder that Alva Rosenberg suggested I get one from, Laurelwood Kennel in California. And I loved that dog and I loved that breed. And when I decided I wanted to have a second breed, I really wanted to get another Frenchie. But I couldn't find anybody who would sell me a good one. Nobody wanted to sell a good bitch to anybody.
Yes, you know, they like kept that them. Now still.
It is, yeah. Yeah. So that's when I wound up, when I went to Finland and saw those English cockers, I thought, okay, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. But I still love the Frenchies.
I like Frenchies too. I showed a lot of them, but I love English cockers.
I just can't believe how popular they've been. I mean, when they become, when I was in them, getting a major was almost impossible. Almost impossible. And now, oh my word. The number one dog in the country. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Sure.
And they're the most popular breed still, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, they're number one. Yeah.
Yeah. So
amazing. It's just unbelievable.
But it's, yeah.
But I could see it coming with it. They became very commercialized on everything, you know.
Oh gosh, yeah, you can buy any color you want now too.
Well, so. that is so sad, really sad.
Yeah. And they think it's a special thing to go and buy one of these colors. Huh? So the people fall for it, but sorry. So what are some of the most memorable assignments?
Well, I got to do the AKC Centennial Show. Well, I think the first person that was on the list, because they let the clubs choose who they wanted. So the first person, he may have died. The second person resigned from judging, and I got the assignment. And I was very, very young. I was probably the youngest judge in there to do that. That was quite amazing, really amazing. Sure. And I
now,
gave
what did
the
you judge there?
Pointers. Okay. Yeah. And I gave the breed to Cumbrian Black Pearl that Corky was showing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then of course I've done the National twice, which is an honor in your own breed I've judged several national specialties.
Yeah, yes.
And then doing the sporting group at the AKC show was also an honor. And then the Hound Group in 20, which was until this year, the last time it had been in Madison Square Garden. So, but that was an amazing assignment. You know.
Sure, that would be.
Fabulous.
Yeah. So what's next? You're not breeding anymore, but you are judging. Are you going to do any more breeds?
No.
No,
I'm just happy with what I have. Yeah.
Sure.
And now
you have three non-sporting breeds. What three of those you have?
Frenchies, Dalmatians, and Bichons. I actually showed a couple of Bichons. I didn't groom them, but I did show them. Fran Wasserman used to groom them for me. But I liked that breed too.
Yeah. Well, it's a fun breed to watch.
It yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. And Dalmatians just kind of made sense.
Yeah.
You know.
No question.
So
if someone walked up to you and said they wanted to get involved in our sport, what words of wisdom would you give them?
Well, they don't have a dog and they just want to start from scratch.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
I think that'd be the best
way. Do your homework. Make sure that it's the right breed for you, that with your lifestyle. And then go to somebody, a top breeder, that's going to work with you. You know,
and same thing. What about if a young person came up to you and said, "I'd like to be a professional handler. What should I do?"
A professional handler?
Because you've had all these different hats, Marjorie. So yeah. I can talk to you all of them.
Well, I think if you want to be a professional handler, you have to work for handlers and learn the different breeds and the groups and actually learn how to condition them, take care of them, and groom them. You know, that's really important. So you don't just say, "I'm going to be a professional handler." You have to apprentice under top handlers in order to learn the ropes.
No question. Yeah. It's amazing. We see some that they'll work for a few weekends and they'll hang out their shingle and they're ready, you know.
Or they go straight from junior showmanship to being a professional handler. You know,
yeah. Some of them are so talented; they just don't have that depth yet. So,
right.
And the last.
Well, it's true when you do the master's class in juniors, it's like, oh my god! First of all, you can't. They're so confident and they're so good at what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing.
Give them a step up, and then if they're willing to go and work for a handler at that point, they're that much further ahead. You know.
Well, some of them are working for him already.
That's good. The third one, what about, like, if I hadn't started judging yet and I said, "Margie, I want to start judging, what advice would you give me?"
Well,
don't do it, Will. You're not ready.
I guess, again, you have to Well, you're probably starting in your own breed, first of all. So that's a given. I guess you need to go to as many specialties as you can, national specialties, have mentors that really are going to be honest with you about not just promoting their breed, but getting you to understand, you know, the intricacies of the breed. That's part of the problem. Sometimes when you go to the seminars, the people giving them are actually pushing their own breeding program and whatnot. Yeah. So you have to do your homework to know who you want to really listen to, or maybe somebody who is a professional, who is a judge. That might be the best route to go for as a mentor.
Yeah. Now down there, I'm not sure the system, like up here, we have to get an all breed mentor. Do you have to do that?
Oh, do
down
you?
There?
No, yeah. No, but that makes sense. Makes sense to me. Yeah.
Okay. And one final question. If you were able to meet the 20-year-old Marjorie now, is there any
if I only knew now what I didn't know then.
What advice would you give her now?
Oh my. I think everybody realizes that when, you know, you make mistakes, you learn from your mistakes and whatnot. But if I knew, I don't know, it would be so much easier if I had all of this knowledge then.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't have made as many mistakes as I did. But
you're right. Well, we learn from those mistakes. So it's a learning
process. I mean, I learned from a Irish setter from a pet store, you know. You can learn.
Oh, there's no question. I always say learning always depends on the student, because in our sport, there is so much education out there that people are, if they're willing to be students, they will learn. But
that's
sometimes
right.
They're not.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're not. So they want to just check that box and say they were there. So
that's true. Yeah. So I don't know.
It's a tough
question. My first thing is I probably wouldn't have bought a dog from a pet store. I didn't. I had no idea this world existed when I bought that dog. I had no idea. I didn't know that you went
to that. So.
She did. I didn't know you went to a breeder. I didn't know there were dog shows. Yeah, I didn't know anything. So
there was good in it. Look what she did.
So I think nowadays people are more aware of what's going on, probably because of TV and having dog shows on TV and everything, you know.
Social media.
Exactly. It would be an easier start now than it was back then, you know.
Yeah. The only problem with nowadays is there's people that want instant gratification, so it's not really in our sport. Now, there are some lucky ones, but not. It's hard, you know. It's hard to just walk in and start winning right away.
Yeah, it is. And that's why the turnover, you know, people don't necessarily stay in it very long.
Right.
But I don't know.
That's always a tough question, though. Well, thank you so much, Margie. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
It's good to see you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Margie. God, I love old stories. They make the day go by. If you like what you see here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. And we look forward to seeing you down the road. Take care now.